That's so interesting.
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, that is very interesting. Please tell me more.
Very interesting.
Marty, that was very interesting.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to That's So Interesting, the podcast where we discuss what we think are objectively interesting things. I'm Graham, and today we're going to be talking about the invasiveness of media and technology. And is that Google Home really listening to you? Not sure. But in the meantime, as always,
it is. It is.
It is.
Be fake news.
It is 100%. 100%. Echo Dot, Google Home, Apple HomePod.
Yeah, it's listening.
Always listening. Always.
Oh, there you have it.
Graham, go on.
Quick hot take. Podcast over. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay, everybody.
Brandon, Brian, how you guys doing, fellas?
Doing great, man. I'm happy to be back. I missed talking to you guys.
Yeah, the hiatus
was real, too, guys.
What was that? Like 3.5, 4 weeks?
No.
Oh, my God.
Weeks.
It felt like forever. I missed you guys so much.
No, time flies when you're having fun, though.
I hear you. I'm, you know, might be a little distracted tonight to all of our listeners. We're streaming the NBA game. Well, at least I am. Everybody else turned it off. So forgive me, but we're getting after it.
Oh, diehard Raps fan over here.
You know what? If there's not a bandwagon, I'm not willing to jump on, let me tell you.
You'll find a spot.
I will make a spot.
100%.
Shots. Shove some people over, throw some kids off the back, make room for the real adults.
They haven't been around long enough.
Hey, speaking of diehard Raptors fan, shout out to Darren Bondi, making it onto CBC News.
Yep, big shout out to Darren.
Oh,
he's been pressing hard. Also, shout out to Andrea Santi from MUR at Waterloo, winning two round trip flights as well as two tickets to NBA Finals Game 4 and two nights stay at the Fairmont in San Francisco. Congrats,
wait,
Andrea.
Wait, two round-trip flights, as in two seats?
Both.
Like an organization,
like
she won a contest to fly to San Fran and watch Game 4 live.
In the arena.
Right. So
she got flown from Toronto to there.
So two, right, okay. You said, right.
What did
you
say?
Two round-trip flights. You said two round-trip flights, which made me think that she's taking two separate trips round-trip.
No, for two people.
Well, no, she won two tickets. Like, her boyfriend's going,
right,
too.
Right, two round-trip tickets.
That was,
Frig.
This is going to be tough, guys. That was way...
No, ask your Google Home what the difference is.
That was way harder than it needed to be. I'm going to let us know all in on the know on that one.
Okay, let me tell you this.
Tell me about it.
So, Christmas this past year, I'm at Christina's house. So, I flew in Christmas... I flew in Boxing Day. And I show up, and they have a Google Home sitting just under their TV in their living room. The day before, I unwrapped a Google Home for my parents for Christmas, which I didn't have time to set up. So I took it with me, and I was going to take it back with me to Edmonton after staying at Christina's house. But they were using their Google Home, like, religiously. It felt like everything they wanted to ask, or like, I don't know, for like every second somebody was asking it a question, and it was super useful. And they actually got like quite adept at being able to use it, and the voice commands and the cadence and like what you needed to say and when and how to ask questions and how to search things on the internet. And it actually became super useful. So I got really excited. So then I brought it out to Edmonton, or brought mine out to Edmonton, and wanted to set up, but we have freaking Eduroam. And in order to connect something to Eduroam, you need to enter in.
What,
like,
does that mean
for you,
Brandon?
Mm-hmm. It means I couldn't use it. It means I had to return it to Costco.
Oh, really?
Unless you...
Yeah, because I couldn't use
Does it have a spot to be plugged in?
Because it's a public internet? It's a public server?
No, yeah, it's just a USB.
Fully private network.
Yeah.
It's the same at work. Like, when we want to do anything for, you know, when, like, a system that we installed was a draft meter, so it measured how many ounces of beer were poured through each line. And then you reconcile that through how many you actually rung in to make sure nobody's stealing. We had to get Ethernet as well as the university to come in and provide an override security password in order to use Eduroam. Like, it's locked down.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, like you go through like a Bluetooth app and you try and set up the Wi-Fi and internet through the Bluetooth app, but because the actual device itself could, like, the same reason I can't use my Xbox. I can use my Xbox, but I can't connect to the internet. Mm-hmm. For the same reason. Anyways,
so you enjoyed it.
Off topic. I enjoyed it. I am up. Long story short, I am up on Google Home, Echo, you know, Alexa, you know, whatever, home mm-hmm. assistants, artificial intelligence. I am up. If they're always listening, great. Same answer I've always said before. I got nothing to hide.
I mean, yeah, that's a bold move. But like, it, ultimately, I don't think it's really that bad. My mom would disagree wholeheartedly. And that's the reason she doesn't have a Facebook yeah. account. But love you, mom. Really, though, I think what I find fascinating is, like, say, looking back during the Cold War when, like, all the propaganda of spies and, like, wiretaps was around, like, you'd be paranoid about, like, your wall telephone.
Yeah.
If it was, like, listening to
Big
you.
Big brother.
And
for sure.
And now you're, like, welcoming this actively listening device into your home specifically with the purpose of listening to you. It's just funny how over time, like, people's attitudes to that sort of thing change. Like,
yeah, I mean, I guess it's different. Like, if we were at war or if we were on the brink of war, maybe people would be a little bit more cautious. But even then, like, I don't know, I'm not a spy. And like,
a little breaking news.
Like, what are the Russians? What do the Russians want to know from me? Like, what could they possibly get from me that would help them win any kind of war? You know, it's like, this guy only shops at Costco. He's up every day and he only talks about basketball.
I think the shopping at Costco is really important. You know what I mean? Like, because if we ever go to war, they're going to need a couple Costcos to supply their team.
Yeah, or they could cut off the supply routes to Costco and I'd be screwed. I would literally die. Let's not talk about that. I wouldn't know where to do.
Let's not talk about that. That's bad.
Yeah, that's a doomsday scenario.
The
that would be not a good
spot. I was thinking about this the other day with the whole, I don't know if you guys have been following, but the Huawei and the US scandal / controversy, and then even a little bit in Canada about privacy and security and how literally, it's most so in America, but a little bit in Canada, but literally every American thinks that Huawei is the Chinese government spying on you if you get one of their phones or one of their products. And in my head, I was thinking the other day of, what about if they just have spyware technology that they, like, the US government can access in all of, like, the Apple phones or, you know, anything that's more produced or manufactured specifically for U.S. clients that the government has an influence on behind the scenes, and they're just like creating this propaganda scheme that really is the exact opposite is true, is that their own government's trying to spy on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, isn't that already a hap? Like, isn't
it's already a thing? But like, to the point of, you know, that if you go online and you look at any Huawei phone that's posted on, say, Bell or on AT&T. Of an advertisement, there's comments littered all over it saying, why would I ever buy a phone that the Chinese government can spy on me for? Like, why would I give my information to a foreign country? All of these things. But literally at the same time, their own government is more or less doing the exact same thing to them on potentially an even bigger scale.
Yeah, I guess the idea is, like, you're probably more comfortable with your own government.
See, I'm not. Listen, I'd rather somebody else's.
Why? They have less authority about acting on
exactly.
It.
They got less influence over my life and out of my community.
Ryan's just standing on the border of Canada, like, sticking out his tongue and waving his fingers in his ears at other countries.
You can't get me. No. You want to spy on this?
Kangaroo tattoo. Say what? I think something that I really get a kick out of is, I saw online someone screenshotted that they, like, downloaded a flashlight app
or something.
And then when they downloaded it and like opened it up for the first time, there was the push notification that came up that said, like, flashlight would like to access your contacts, like your Facebook, your Instagram, your Snapchat, like all of this, like, vital, like, your phone application, all these vital details and pieces of information. It's like, yes, you're lighting up the way there, mm-hmm. and that's all you're doing, eh? So that's pretty suspicious.
Yes. And it's been very well researched in that field of being cautious when you download those apps, of just not wheeling through and accepting everything that it's asking you to do, because the way that a lot of those apps make money is their developers will create them, but then they'll actually retain money from malware companies or people who want to put in viruses mm-hmm. or spyware into your phone, and they'll receive payment / you know, bonuses to have this spyware / malware attached to their app when you download it. So like, if you download anything that's like that, decline it, because you have no idea what's also attached to it.
Totally.
Tons of people's bank information have been stolen that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is like one of the downsides of Android, is anybody can put an app on the mm-hmm. Google Play Store, and it's not vetted. And that's the difference with the Apple iTunes, or what was it called? The iTunes Store?
Apple Store.
The App Store?
Yeah. Oh, rest in peace, iTunes. Let's just take a hot moment. Like, it's gone, guys.
Thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers and likes on Facebook.
Is it actually gone?
They officially announced that they're shutting it down at their most recent.
I mean, I guess. Oh, WDC. I mean, I guess they have.
Yeah, they don't need it.
So it's not like they're not offering music service.
But still,
anymore.
May it rest in peace.
I remember going to visit a friend of a friend's house on Vancouver Island, and he was like a higher up person in the government, and we were just like hanging out, and he had his iTunes open, and he's like, "Oh, just like go pick some songs and play whatever music you want." He had legit every song in the iTunes library. What?
When you were younger, too, what? Right? Like when they were like 15,
when
20
I was younger.
Cents a song.
Yeah, like he had everything. And this was before you could just go and like play every song. You couldn't like, you know what I mean? Like this is before Apple Music, where you could just jump on and play any song because you had access to every song. This is when you had to buy each song if you wanted to play it. And these weren't like, he didn't download all these songs. Like he didn't like LimeWire, FrostWire all these songs because they had all the album information and all that stuff that you wouldn't get from like pirating songs. So like this guy legitimately had every song.
Remember when you could like give your computer AIDS?
Yes.
Just so you could.
Although you shouldn't say it
like
that.
Listen to the music that you want.
You should apologize. You shouldn't say it like that.
You're right. I apologize. But you would absolutely change the future of your laptop or computer.
Yeah, you would destroy
just
it.
Just to have those tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times did you guys get the, I did not have sexual relations with that woman?
All the time.
Man.
All the time. And like, remember that was the biggest worry of like downloading things, was that you would get something you didn't want.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, and you know, also the fear of like getting malware or stuff like that. But like, you know, we're talking about willingly paying money for products and then having them willingly steal things, information from us.
I have a question for you guys. Have you ever been just thinking about something and not tell a soul in the world or interact with technology in any way? And then the next time you open up either like a Google feed or Instagram or some other social media, boom, freaking hammocks. The exact thing that you were thinking about.
I want a two-person
first advertisement.
Hammer. Yeah.
Bug screen or no bug screen? Like, what are your experiences with that?
I've had it happen a couple times. But I also think like that's, the coincidence is just as shocking. Oh, Steph just missed a three throw. You suck.
Wait, hold on. I literally just checked my phone for 15 seconds and then I came back to hammock.
Steph sucks. First of all, he just missed a free throw. Second of all, is when you're in a conversation with somebody and you're thinking it, and then suddenly out of the blue, they come up with the same thought and say it out loud. Like that also blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But
for sure.
I mean, their Google Home was listening to your Google Home.
But no, like, you didn't even say it out loud.
So they know about you?
Like, and Graham's right. Like, when
yeah,
technology
but, yeah, because does, they know your thoughts
does
already.
It, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's scary. Like, when you think about something, and then the next time you have an Instagram ad, it's just there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, where like that's... where are we with microchips? Like, have you been implanted? Who knows?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be that far-fetched. Like, I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be that
Look
surprised.
At the, what was it, the Black Mirror episode? That one was crazy
yeah.
that we watched with yeah. Christina in Greece. Like, it was mm-hmm. all, Brandon, have you seen the one that's all, like, I don't know if you watch it. I don't.
I'm not a huge fan of those, but
me neither. It anyways, was but it, this episode was on this girl that got implanted at a young age so that her mom could basically control what she sees and censored it to make sure that she didn't see anything traumatic, and like swear words were tuned out, porn was like blurred out in her vision.
Helicopter parent to the extreme.
Yeah. And like it's like I don't know. I know that it's probably exists somewhere in the world. I don't know what to extend, but I'm sure that people have tested on
it. I mean, yeah. yeah. I mean, sometimes you like to think that these are like kind of futuristic sci-fi would never happen things, but we also live in a very, very sheltered corner of the world in North America.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's so much stuff going on in so many other countries that we have no idea about. Like, ethics laws are different and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
On the topic of helicopter parents, there's a new term. We learned about this term. It's called lawnmower parents. You guys ever hear about that?
Tell us all about it.
So, like, where helicopter parents are kind of protecting their children from things,
mm-hmm.
lawnmower parents are, like, paving the way. You know what I mean? So, like, cutting down all the barriers, like ensuring that their kids don't have to do any work, you know, kind of solving all the problems for them rather than like protecting them, like kind of, I guess, being like reactive in a sense.
Just
like lawnmower parents are like super proactive. Or yeah, like not even pathfinding, but like, yeah. And kind of setting their kids up that way.
Totally.
But like you brought up a good point about like desensitizing. And, like, we are so desensitized anyways. Like, I don't even think parents need to desensitize their children. Like, we had the couple days in Edmonton, or maybe about a week ago now, for a couple days, we had all the smoke from the forest fires up in northern mm-hmm. Alberta blow over the city.
Yeah.
And it was awful. Like, it was really, really bad. I mean, of course, like, northern BC and northern Alberta get this every year in the summertime. But... it was really bad, and like we're so desensitized, like it's awful. Like people are losing their homes. People had to be evacuated down to Edmonton.
Yeah, how many packs of cigarettes?
You know, and all we're worried about, like, oh, you know, the air quality is poor in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Not that like all these people are losing their homes, and that something traumatic is happening. And then, you know, it just occurred to me today that this, you know, the skies cleared up and the air has gotten back to normal, and like I almost forgot that the fires were still happening.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like,
because it's not in your little bubble.
Wasn't above. Yeah, it's not in my little bubble. And even when it was in my bubble and when I was made aware of it, I wasn't really thinking too much about how devastating and disastrous these fires can be. And, you know, like my uncle lives in Fort McMurray and my cousins are there mm-hmm. and my aunt's there. And like they went through the fires in Fort Mac and they had to be evacuated to Edmonton, and they were in Edmonton for like 2 months, and my cousin went back to Vancouver, and like they had to be relocated and had to go back. And you know, it's not like I haven't been semi touched in a familial sense from fires, but it's just so interesting. Like we hear about natural disasters events all again.
And but like from the desensitization perspective too, one thing I know that like I didn't even experience it like even remotely as close as many folks do, but like, even what people think that they can get away with saying online to other people without having any repercussions, mm-hmm. like, and being so desensitized
oh, yeah.
that their words and comments have legitimate impacts. Like, I faced it a little bit when I was in student politics. And, you know, stuff gets thrown around, names get thrown around, alternative facts do on Reddit. And, like, it's just like, before we jumped on this stream, we were talking about Reddit and NBA streams and how great Reddit could be for information. But at the same time, I was like, my immediate gut reaction from that experience was like, Reddit is a really crappy place to be and where a lot of crappy humans go to think that they have a voice about nothing and go to just like shit disturb. And I find that like a really hard place to participate or to even interact with, knowing that that is a piece of like technology or our, like the way that people are communicating online. I'm like, frick, this place sucks.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like we grew up with the internet. You know what I mean? I mean, like, obviously the internet was around before we were born, but in terms of its big evolution in social media and changes to the way that the internet works, like, we've grown up
through all of it. I mean, from a...
So we kind of understand
consumer aspect, like we grew up right as it was coming into people's homes, right?
Well,
like
that's
it,
what
it
I mean.
Didn't exist like, in you know your modern family's house before. I guess I'm older than you guys, but to what, 97, 98 was when dial-up really like.
Okay, you're not that much older than us.
No, I know, but like my first interaction with internet would have been 2 years before your guys, like depending on when you had access or like the resource that you had. But I'm just saying
that. Well, Papa Barnes started me young.
I know, he was getting you on the video production
100% into the freaking pod racer simulator.
Well, I just mean, like, imagine how scary it is now for kids to jump in with the internet and just be like hit in the face with everything that's going on. You know what I mean? Like, we grew up with the development of internet trolls, you know, and like cyberbullying, and like we were there for the start of all of it. So we kind of understand and like know where it came from. We were kind of ushered in slowly. It was a smooth transition.
And like, we didn't have,
you know what I mean? So that when things are,
we didn't have social media until, I don't know, I didn't have social media till like grade 9. I had MSN when I was in elementary school, but like, that was more of a chat. Didn't have a phone until grade 9.
Right.
Snapchat wasn't a thing. Instagram wasn't a thing. Facebook really like just started to become a thing.
Yeah.
So we were kind of brought up as all this stuff was being developed. So you kind of got the literacy of it as you kind of grew up and kind of got to figure things out. But now, you know, kids are starting to use all these things and it's like full blown diving headfirst into it.
I mean,
it's like a total different learning curve. And that's why I think, you know, you see people today are just kind of more willing or more okay with being able to say whatever they think they want to say online because they don't truly understand what it means.
And you know what the craziest thing about it too is, the way that I view social media is the same as I kind of grew up on it. And I don't know if you guys have it as this, like the same perspective, but social media was a way to interact with your real life friends when you couldn't necessarily hang out with them that night. Whereas like, and you wouldn't add anybody that you really didn't know, like that you didn't have an interaction with in real life. At least that was my experience. All of my friends on Facebook were my friends in real life, or at least people that I interacted with at school or were friends of friends that I had hung out with a handful of times. Now it seems like like with Instagram models or people just like wanting to be connected as much as possible,
LinkedIn,
there isn't a value for those meaningful connections in real life. Therefore, when you say something hurtful or you say, like, you know, I'll say like a shitty human comment about somebody else or something, you don't get the impact because you're not actually friends with these people in real life. So you don't get to see the repercussions when you're at school the next day of like, oh, that comment on that person's post like really hurt them.
Yeah.
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 Does that make sense? I don't know if you guys interacted with it like that, but I know that's how I did.
Yeah. I mean, I know Twitter and Instagram kind of took off from Twitter for sure was like a following celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like it was designed as an outlet for celebrities, and then, you know, everyday people could follow celebrities and see what they were saying. And that's how kind of it grew. But while we're on the topic of social media, let me give you some statistics.
Always got stats. Okay. Always got stats.
I got some stats for you. Now,
Lowry shooting 60% from the field, 4 for 4 from 3-point. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, I don't know who compiled these stats, but this is from brandwatch.com. And they're saying, as of May 2019, so last month, worldwide population, 7.7 billion. Internet, 4.4 billion users. There are 3.5 billion active social media users, which means that on average, people have 7.6 social media accounts, which is crazy. Wow. Here's the one that blew me away was, the average daily time spent on social media is 142 minutes a day.
Hmm.
140, that's 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was gonna ask you guys. Like, even social media aside, how much of your day is in front of a screen?
Yeah. Too much.
Oh, it's awful. Actually less now that I'm not in class right now, but 100%. Have you guys turned on the time reminder on Instagram?
No.
No.
Oh, I've removed it from my home screen. I've removed it from any place where I can go and easily access it on my phone. And then I've also put the timer to 30 minutes a day. So as soon as I hit 30 minutes, it sends me a reminder. I'm at 30 minutes and I'm like, okay, I'm done. Because it's just so easy to spend time on Instagram or social or any platform and get lost. And I don't know. I started unfollowing a bunch of accounts because I found that they just didn't bring me joy. And I'm like, if these people on Instagram don't bring joy to my life and they're only, bringing negativity or, they're not making me happy when I go and look at their content, then to me, it's not worth it.
Sounds
just,
like
you're Marie Kondoing your social media. Because
I was going through and I was just...
Sounds like they're not your real friends.
Thank them for the joy.
Well, not even... Well, but of course, there are a lot of accounts on Instagram that I was following that, were just not people accounts, but business accounts.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
It was just a throwback to our comment about Facebook and adding our actual friends only and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. And so, that's kind of what I ended up doing was, even people who I was friends with in the past but haven't spoken to in a couple of years, and I'm like, I don't know, I moved halfway across the country or across the continent, and it's like, we weren't really that great of friends before. Just gonna hit the unfollow because, I don't know, you're not contributing to my life in a positive way now, and it doesn't make sense for me to keep viewing your content. Like, I only have so many minutes in a day. I'm not gonna waste time looking at your stuff. So, I've been trying to go through and do that every once in a while, but I don't know. My goal has just been to use social media less because you're right. It's just about cutting down on screen time. Brian, how's your book club coming? We haven't checked in with your book club in a while.
It's not going as hot as I would like it to.
Not as HOTTOGO as you wanted.
What was the last book that I was telling you guys about? Do you remember?
Some old book that I was like, was this around during the war?
Yeah, that book was around. So that one's done. I am... have three books on the go right now and currently not doing anything with any of them because of this triathlon training, and I started taking a course this summer, so reading has been put on the back burner. But if anybody this is super interesting, if anybody would like to check out a very informative podcast / interview, it's by my man Joe Rogan. And while Joe sometimes
your man. Close buddies.
He does some questionable interviews that I don't necessarily like. This one was phenomenal. It's with this guy named Johan Hari, H-A-R-I. And they talk everything from like the war on drugs to creating a less depressed society to creating more meaningful connections, improving community. And he goes through a bunch of real life examples and studies and in different worlds. Like, for example, Switzerland legalized, I think it was like meth at some point, and allowed for them to have administered meth sites. And they saw drug overdoses and drug uses drop by like almost close to 70 or 80% within 6 months of them doing this. And he talks about like addiction, not being like drugs themselves aren't actually addicted. It's the feeling that you get from escaping the society that you're involved with. It's like, it's really, really cool. But the title of this, it's on YouTube, so you can actually like anybody can go and check it out. It's called Joe Rogan Experience number 1250 Johann Hari. Johann.
God damn, that's Hari. A lot of podcasts. Yes.
But please listen. It's like three hours long, but it's worth like listen to it in spurts. It's worth every single second. And so I'm reading one of that this guy's books, Johann Hari's, and it's amazing.
What's Lost the book Connections.
Called? So I was reading that a little bit on the trip with in Greece. And it's all about how we struggle as a society with anxiety and depression more so than any other point in history. And it's getting at the root cause as to why we are experiencing this as a society. And one of the main reasons is because we don't connect with each other in meaningful ways anymore. We are always on our phone. We don't like when I was growing up, and this is an example that they gave, but when I was growing up, like I had neighborhood kids that I would always run around with, knock on their doors, go play tag, road hockey, whatever.
Oh, right? The neighbor
now
kids
don't do that anymore. And so they lose these connections growing up and therefore they feel more isolated. That it was in the 1990s. This was one stat that really stuck out to me. 1990s. Most people had on average 3.5 people that they felt like they could call in any situation if they needed anything, and they would have their back, whether that's they went to jail, you know, DUI, whatever it may be. Now, on average, it's 0.25 people. Yes.
What?
It's less than one person on average that people feel like they can go and call if they ever needed something. And so like...
So...
Like including parents.
Including everybody. And so it's really going into like... And it also touches on antidepressants and medication and big pharma and the fact that really they're not scientifically proven. And we've made up this big belief in society that depression and anxiety is caused by chemical imbalances in the brain. However, there's zero. And when I say zero, I'm quoting the book and he did a ton of research. Zero confirmed cases that like your serotonin levels when they're down impact your happiness, right? Where a lot of these beliefs have just been made up by saying, oh, like when your serotonin levels are high, it contributes to being a happier person, but it's not necessarily the root cause of you being happy. So just if they're lower, it doesn't necessarily mean that when you boost them you're going to be a happy person,
right? You're saying it's more of a correlation. Exactly.
He goes into this whole thing of placebos and his own personal like 20-year experience with antidepressants. And he's not saying don't use them. And he's saying if they work for you, then that's great. But you also have to understand that one of the real reasons as to why we feel so disconnected as a society is because we aren't creating meaningful connections or having that sense of belonging in a specific community or communities. And it's fascinating.
That makes me really feel grateful to have, you know, like not only just the both of you, but also... kind of our like our circle of friends, because I would say that, you know, I would feel comfortable calling any of you guys
totally
in a moment of need, and like that's just my university friends, you know, that's not even including my parents or my brother or you know, or even some of the people I've met here, you know, like
that's
so if that's true, then that's, you know, That makes me feel
Yeah, I would definitely recommend giving it a read or a listen if you're into audiobooks. Like, I'm not even finished, and every single page that I turn to, I'm like, oh my god, this makes so much sense.
Lost connections. You're on hurry. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can lend it to you too. I'm almost done.
Sweet. Yeah, I'd be into that.
Similar note, have you guys heard of The Range by David Epstein?
No.
Nope.
So David Epstein was the one who came out with Sports Genes.
Yeah.
In 2015, okay. I believe. Anyways, he's got a new book now. It's called The Range. And basically it deals with the contrast between specialization in sport versus sampling. So looking at like what in the end is more effective, and you know, spoiler alert, like obviously you need, kind of need a balance, and there's also a range, and it depends on what mm-hmm. your end goal is. But I was at a sport conference this past weekend, and one of the presenters was talking about it, and how good it was, and how it kind of bridges the gap, because we often think about in terms of sport development, there's only two pathways, and it's either early sport specialization like Tiger Woods, or it's, you know, multi-sport involvement like Steve Nash or mm-hmm. Roger Federer, you know, and like there's the only two solutions to getting to become a high performance athlete, when really it, you know, it's dependent on a whole lot of factors.
Correct.
And we shouldn't really be focusing on the two extremes. We should be focusing on, you know, possibly a balance, or, you know, looking deeper at the range of options along the continuum.
Yep.
So I think that's, I mean, like you said, you're enrolled in a class. Like, I think maybe once I finish my master's, I'll have more time for leisure reading, because all my reading's been taking up with academic reading. But yeah, that's definitely on my list of books to read at some point.
Yeah.
Even though I got a lot of books in front of me that I want to read, but I haven't read yet.
Did you end up reading that book that I gave to you? The
No Fears, No Excuses.
Yeah, the one by
the University of Waterloo professor. Yeah, it's nice. Sitting right in front of me. No, I have not opened it.
Read it.
Oh, yeah.
At least he knows where it is, right?
It's sitting next to Phil Jackson, Sacred Hoops, Phil Jackson, Seven Rings, John Calipari books.
Nice.
The Coaching Habit, John Feinstein, Champions Club. I've got currently reading the Challenge Culture by, I forget his name, but he's the CEO of Dunkin' Donuts. And basically he just talks about how he says all, but I mean, you can't make catch-all statements. So it's most successful organizations run on pushback.
Yep.
And how in order for organizations to develop and grow and be successful, there needs to be constructive criticism, basically, and questioning and challenging from everybody in the organization, from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. And in order for organizations to thrive, especially in the 21st century, like everybody needs to be able to have a say. And the people who are making decisions need to be willing to listen and need to be accepting of criticism. Yes. And challenge and pushback. So that's kind of interesting. I think I'm like 3 or 4 chapters in, and like, I don't know if I'm going to get much more out of this book. Cause I feel like I've told you the moral of what he's trying to say. And like, it's just basically him going through his like history in business and the different organizations he's worked with, and where pushback has worked and where it hasn't, or you know, how different organizations have failed or folded or gone bankrupt because they weren't susceptible to pushback and challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just quite interesting. And like, I want to relate it to coaching. Like, you know, I want to coach a team where my athletes can come to me and challenge the things that I do, right? Because it means that they're engaging and that they understand, and that
yeah, they're thinking
about the things that I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just, okay, coach. Yes, coach. We'll do it, coach. Just because I said so, and because I think it's like, I'm only one brain. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make sense for me to ignore 15 other brains. So anyways.
One kind of related topic before we go is they've like, I think it was Google is starting to do the hire as a team concept. based off of that same principle, as like they'll find teams within their organization who challenge each other but also push each other to work hard, like harder, and work well as a team when interacting in that very dynamic environment. And they'll actually take a team from one section of the company and move it to the other, all, whether it's 10 people, whether it's 15 people, whether it's 4 people, and get them to work on the next project or in the next sector, because it's not about the core, the hard skills that they have. It's about the soft skills and them being able to navigate problems together as a team instead of just individuals.
100 level chemistry?
I mean, that's a really good point, because like you think about it, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I think the three of us are a really good team. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe like the sum of, you know, one of those, like the sum of our parts is greater than whatever each, that's.
Yeah, everybody's, you know what I mean? Individual part. That
the whole is greater than the parts. Yeah. The sum of the parts.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's quite interesting. Like you think about it, hiring individual people to work in team positions is quite archaic. Correct.
And you, like, even with my current job, like, yeah, I interacted with my staff that I had, but during my interview process, I didn't interact with any of the managers that would be reporting into me, which looking back, I'm like, this is crazy. Yeah. Like, I should have had an hour one-on-ones with each of them to talk about fit, goals, priorities, what they like to, how they like to be held accountable, like all of these different things to see if the fit was there or not.
Yeah, because it's so much bigger than just the small circle of people.
And honestly, like, do you have the skills to navigate difficult conversations? Well, yeah, but like, at the same time, what are these difficult conversations? Because that also can be very subjective based off the situation of the person. Right?
Yeah. 100%. Well,
this kind of got off topic, but I like it.
Yeah, I always like to check in with the book club. Anyways, I think third quarter just ended. Or we're about halfway through the third quarter.
Halfway through the third quarter. It's a good game. Steph is throwing up absolute bricks, and I love it.
Oh, laying a foundation for game 4.
I'm not jinxing it. I'm just speaking facts. He's actually kind of being reckless. I don't know why. It looks like he's panicking a little bit.
For context, this podcast is being recorded June 5th of 2019 during game 3 of the Raps Warriors NBA Finals. That's how busy we are.
It's crazy. We got to multitask.
Hence the hiatus. We had to record during the NBA Finals game.
No rest for the wicked.
Unreal.
Another great conversation. Well, semi-interesting conversation on the over-influence of media that probably went way off the rails, but it's kind of how we roll.
That's it.
Kind of how things go. And at the end of the day, as long as we're laughing and having fun, it's all really good.
That's
about
a wrap.
He's gonna hate.
Saw the brand catching on. You guys got it there and play a little bit there, Graham and you and Ellie.
Get out there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Ellie's bought into the brand entirely, and so she's making a big social media push. Obviously, a little counterintuitive or ironic, given our conversation of how social media is sort of invaded our lives in every which way. But you know, the fan base is growing, and so big things ahead, I think.
Well, if you want to get in touch with the brand, you can do so via email, thatsointerestingpod@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with us on Instagram at CSI Podcast. Gentlemen, as always, been a blast.
Pleasure.
Get off your phones.
Stay connected. Get into the community.
And get out there and play, kids.